Done with frizz? Say goodbye to that poof. Repel humidity and tame those flyaways. One drop, frizz stops with John Frieda Frizzy Serum. Your hair talks and frizz never interrupts. John Frieda Frizzy Serum. One drop, frizz stops.
Only from John Frieda.
Want to make your blonde blonde? Sheer Blonde Go Blonder Collection by John Frieda lightens and brightens hair two full shades to give you your best blonde every day. Your hair talks. Make a statement with Sheer Blonde Go Blonder Collection. Only from John Frieda.
Welcome into Locked On Grizzlies for this Friday. A little bit of a bonus episode for you guys, dropping at a different time, but I wanted to bring you the interview that I conducted earlier this morning with John Ollinger, the Grizzlies vice president of basketball operations, as we are less than a week away from the draft. We talked a lot of different subjects, including, of course, the draft and also the Grizzlies' plans, how he scouts, what he thinks about this group, what the league and the changes in the league have changed for him in terms of scouting players. All that kind of good stuff is on the way, so you're going to want to stick around and listen. I want to say a big thank you, of course, to our sponsors and one of our newest sponsors, our friends at Outdoors, Inc., and this is the time of year when you need to go over to Outdoors, Inc. Outdoors, Inc., they got five great locations here in the area in Jackson, Tennessee as well. And for those of you that have been around the Memphis area for a while, you know about Outdoors, Inc. They've been outfitting human-powered recreation since 1974. But they got great outdoor gear, incredible stuff. If you are the kind of person that goes outside at all for any kind of recreation or work or whatever, you got to know Outdoors, Inc. But let me tell you about something that I know very much about Outdoors, Inc., because this is kind of my bread and butter. A lot of people don't know. I am a footwear guy, but specifically I'm a sandals guy, or flip-flops, or some kind of a open-toed situation. I have never been a big fan of regular tennis shoes unless I'm, in a sport or something like that, but just day-to-day, I'm sandals, some flip flops. I've got to have some air going through those feet. That's why I got to have that opened up, and that's where Outdoors Inc. comes in, because they've got incredible premium footwear, not just for men, women too, kids. It's where I go. I love Birkenstocks. Tevas are fabulous. They've got so many great brands for you to check out, and these are like top of the line. Top of the line, but you're not going to pay top of the line pricing. You're going to get a great deal and you're going to get some fabulous footwear. Go to the store, check it out in person. You can try everything on. You can get the evaluations. The cool thing about Outdoors Inc. is that they've got great people that have been working there. Most of their employees have been working there a long, long time. So they understand how this whole thing works. They're great about working with people. They're great about helping you with whatever it is that you need. And then you can go there and you could take care of business, or if, for those of you that are out of the area, or if you're just in town and you don't want to stop by, but you want to order something online, I could save you a little money. Go to their website, outdoorsinc.com, and use the promo code LOGrizzlies. That's right. Coupon code LOGrizzlies saves you 10% off of your entire order. So go online and use that code LOGrizzlies. You're going to love it. At one of their five different area locations, go and check it out in person. And then you can order their order online, outdoorsinc.com. Again, these guys are awesome. I want to thank them so much for their support of the podcast. And I want to encourage you to go and check it out. They got great spots, great. They're fun stores. Just go and walk around. And you can go do some rock climbing in a lot of their stores. They got the great rock wall. The one over not too far from me on Germantown Parkway has got this great like rock wall where you get to go and climb up. It's just a fun place to go and check out with the family. So it's outdoorsinc.com, and you're going to love those footwear. And great ideas, too, for Father's Day. Not too late. Those of you that are listening, Father's Day is Sunday. Go and check it out now. Outdoors Inc. and outdoorsinc.com. As I mentioned, I talked with John Hollinger earlier this morning over on the radio side of things, and I wanted to bring you that interview because a lot of you I know don't get a chance to hear it, and it's good stuff. John has got a lot to say, having a lot of fun. We talk a little bit about not only all the stuff that I alluded to earlier, but kind of like rumors this time of year, what's real, what's not real, what are the plans, all that sort of thing. So you're going to get a little inside look at what John Hollinger has been up to and what the Grizzlies are going to be up to. So be sure to check that out again here on the pod. So I'm going to let you hear that. Everybody have yourself a great weekend. We'll be back next week with a lot more here on Locked On Grizzlies, including a look at the draft and starting to get into a lot of the names and a lot of the things that you're really going to want to hear from that side of it. So check it out again over the weekend. You can listen to this, and then we'll be back with some fresh shows again on Monday. So enjoy that. Until then, have yourself a great weekend, a great Father's Day. Now, here's my interview with John Hollinger, the Grizzlies vice president of basketball operations and a very, very busy man. So I appreciate, John, you taking the time this morning to carve out a few moments for us. How are you?
I'm doing great, and thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah, man, absolutely. And give me like the rundown of your May, June, what you've been up to, because you guys don't, at this moment in time, have technically a draft pick, which is an important part of the draft, is my understanding. And so
I've heard that too. It's a crazy rumor going around.
I know, it's weird. It's weird how it works in the NBA these days. So what's the May and June been like for you?
Sure. It's actually we're almost busier when the season ends than when we're actually playing the games, bizarrely enough. So after we did all our year end business, you know, meetings with the players and coaches and whatnot, which takes a few days, I headed straight over to Europe for 10 days, scouting a bunch of players, obviously looking at players for the draft, looking at free agents, looking at players for future drafts, just doing my homework over there. Then we've been back over here, getting ready for the draft and free agency, you know, watching some of these playoff games like everybody else, obviously, but mostly we've just been in the office pounding away at it.
You guys, and this is kind of a question related to, I opened up the forum for folks that want to throw in some questions online or on the text. And so we got, you kind of mentioned it, so I'll throw in one of the questions from Matt, who wanted to know, what's your favorite city in Europe to go and scout? I read some of your reports, and you did a little piece for Grizzlies.com about trip to Belgrade and some other places. Where do you like to go? Give me the John Hollinger European scouting tour.
Well, I think, you know, everyone obviously loves Paris and loves going to Spain and whatnot. The place that I find phenomenally underrated is Antwerp, Belgium, because it doesn't get tourists, but it has a beautiful old center, as arguably the most gorgeous train station in Europe, incredible food, really easy to get around to different places. Like, I want to say it was like 45 minutes from Brussels or something. Not a lot of ballers in Belgium, unfortunately, so don't really get there much. But that one is definitely way up on the list.
Trying to think of the best Belgian baller of all time. There was a guy named Willy Steveniers, I remember, who played in the NBA a long time ago, who was Belgian. That's my only Belgian. I've got one Belgian guy. That's it.
DJ Benga.
Oh, he was Belgian?
Yes. Had a Belgian passport anyway. And
fair enough.
There have been a couple of guys, I think, who were drafted. Like Axel Hervel was drafted about 15 years ago.
Yes. All right, that's the Belgian All-Star team. I look forward to that.
And actually, Tony Parker was born in Belgium, although he's French.
Yeah, you know, they could claim him, but I think he's played a little bit for France. What do you look for in a city? Like, what's your, cause since you're there, you're in and out, you're watching, you're in a gym, you're not exactly, hitting the sights around town, I wouldn't think.
No, that's the unfortunate part. So I like places that can be done in a 20 minute whirlwind in the morning before heading out to the airport. But, there's a few good places like that. Like Riga, Latvia is kind of like that. That was kind of nice. Madrid is like that. And it's really, you know, it's kind of like, okay, where's the arena in relation to the city and some other factors that like would not apply to the normal tourist.
One other thing, I know you are a coffee guy like myself. I've got my special blend here I'm drinking as we speak. Where's the best coffee?
Oh, great question. The best coffee, I still got to go Italy, I think.
Yeah, it's got surely. I was going to say, yeah.
It's just a little bit of cut above, you know. Especially like I didn't go this year, but a few times I've gone to the Euro Camp in Treviso, Italy, and just all those places in northern Italy. Like, they're total coffee snobs. They have all the best machines. They, you know, sit there and make sure it's a perfect pour every time. So I got to go Italy.
So I mean that's that is. It's kind of what they do. So I think they'll be appreciative of your heads up. John Hollinger joining us, the Grizzlies Vice President of Basketball Operations this morning, talking draft and in coffee. So if you want to fire off a question, do so 67129 on the text or on Twitter at Peter Edmiston. Quick one from Roberto, who asks if you want to be Milwaukee's GM. I don't know if you want to comment on that, John. You probably don't.
I'll probably leave that one alone. You know, we were hoping it would happen for Ed over there, and obviously that it looks like they've decided to go in a different direction. We're happy to have Ed here, though. So,
yes, Ed, so Ed was involved.
Selfishly, it's a good thing, right?
Yes, Ed Stavansky was involved in the early parts of that process, which seems to be a little. It's an interesting one. I'm not sure exactly what that process is at this moment. Now, you guys, as you kind of approach the draft, as we said, no pick right now, but you have to prepare, I assume, John, as if you could get one, because this team has a history of buying second round picks, something that's happened more often than not. Quite a few second round picks sold last year, although the price tag seems to be going up, but you guys have a little over $3 million to spend if that were the case. How do you evaluate, knowing that right now you don't have a pick, but you very well might? How do you kind of start to break this thing down?
Yeah, sure. I think for us, we look at where are the likely entry points in the draft based on our conversations with other teams and who is likely to want to move off of their pick and what do we have that could potentially get us that pick. Now, I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to figure out we're sitting on a big stash of future seconds, so maybe one of the picks in 2018 or 2019 can get us a pick this year, which is the same thing we did a year ago to get picks 31 and 35. I think, you know, fortunately we've been able to, I think in the last 2 years we've acquired 7 second round picks. We've used 3 of them already on Andrew Harrison, Roddy Zagorats, and Deontay Davis. But we still have 4 of those futures sitting around, plus our own in 18 and 19. So we're in pretty good shape on that front. If we want to jump in, and it's just sizing up what are the entry points, who's going to be available there, and whether that's worth pouncing or not.
Did you, without a pick, it's hard, I think, to set up the normal customary workouts that you guys like to set up. But there have been a few rumblings over there. What have you guys been doing workout-wise?
Well, as you know, Peter, we promised Malachi Richardson, so we haven't really bothered with any workouts. We're just going to go ahead and honor that.
I've heard that. I've heard that promise was out there. It's you promised Markelle Fultz if he's still
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
If he's still there after the draft, he's right there.
If he's still there at pick 61, we may jump on.
You're
that.
You're going to jump all over him.
No, in all seriousness, it is tough to get players into workout. And honestly, it's tough to get them into workout even when you have a pick, because there's 50 guys who think they're going to the top 20.
Right.
So when you're picking in the 20s, it can still be a little challenging. This year, obviously, was more challenging. We've had a couple guys in, but it hasn't been a big production. Ed and I went out to the, you know, these agents conduct workouts of their own out west at the end of May. They kind of line them all up, so they're one right after the other. So we kind of had to go to the players this year, you know, and watch them in these environments, which, you know, we don't get to control it as much. It's a little bit of a dog and pony show, but it's what you can do.
So what do you get out of the workout normally? If you got a player and you control the process, how is that better, or what information do you get from that you couldn't necessarily get from the dog and pony show that the agents put on?
Yeah, I think you can coach them up more and see how they respond to it. I think you can do specific drills to design to test weaknesses that you may be concerned about. I think you could just have this ability to customize for the questions you have about particular players that you don't have control over when you're just going to somebody else's workout.
How many?
And the same is true actually for the draft combine too, for that matter, because we have, obviously, we saw the players that Danes have played in that. We were able to see perform there as well.
I like that. I like that word. That's they deign to engage the presence. The rose petals were thrown out onto the court for the guys that went out and actually did it. What do you have to do in that vein, real fast, John? To take a quick detour. Is there anything we can do to change this process to make to have some kind of meaningful competition in that sense to compel players to play or to be a bigger part of the combine in some way, because it's a little strange the way that the whole thing has worked out right now.
Yeah, I think it's hard to compel guys to play because, obviously they can say, well, I tweaked my hamstring or something.
Right.
And what are you going to do? Are you going to call them on and say, no, get out there, So I don't think you can really compel that. Participation in the health and medical, I think, is a bigger deal to a lot of us, and that's something that there's I think some debate on as to how we can get better compliance, especially with the top end players, with that, because that's something that's really important to us, it's tough when you can't get access to that information.
This whole season that we've seen, John, and with what I think was one of the more offensively incredible finals, in particular, two incredible offensive teams, and much has been made of the style and everything else that's discussed. How does that factor into how you rate players, how you assess, how you scout, what players have to do? How is what the Warriors and Cavs and what these teams are doing change the way that you evaluate your players?
Well, I think it's less about the Warriors and Cavs and just about the whole league and the direction the game is going, where it's a four-out league now, and it didn't used to be. So that's a big change. And you saw us shift in that direction last year, putting Jamichael on the perimeter, putting Mark on the perimeter, and letting them fire away from the three-point line. And I think the three-point shot is becoming a bigger weapon. And then I still think, though, when it gets down to the nitty-gritty, your ability to just take somebody one-on-one and get to the cup, now that the floor is so spread out, like, that ability almost becomes more important now, too. But it's weird because it has to be in the context of you also need to be a shooting threat. So I think the game demands a little more of you maybe than it used to, which is, that's how it goes, right? The progress of our game.
Yeah,
year. But I do think it makes it a little more challenging, especially when you're looking at bigger players. I don't think as much has changed in our assessment of guards. I think how we assess bigs has changed a lot.
Yeah, the role of the big, the true big is totally different now. The thing, John, I kind of have this like little theory or this little idea. I think that normally people would look at it and like, I don't know, offense, defense, 50-50, like you got to do both. It's basketball. But I feel like offense is now 70 or 80. I don't know. I mean, you still have to defend. Defending is still important. I'm not by any means saying it's not. But it just feels like unless you can score or be a threat to score in some of these ways we talk about, it's hard to put you out there on the floor.
Yeah, and I think the things that you're pointing to a little bit, the league had more variance on the offensive end than on the defense end this year. So the spread between the best offensive teams is bigger than the spread between the best and worst defensive teams, which historically has not been the case, which has really interesting implications because it suggests that you can get further by loading up on offense than by loading up on defense, which like I said, has never been the case before.
Yeah, can you even load up on defense now?
Well, you can. You just might not, you might end up losing on the bargain. The interesting thing with a flowing sport is that transitions are easier to score on than when you're taking the ball out of the net. So your offense actually does impact your defense and vice versa.
So with all that kind of in mind, then, John, how much do you and Ed and Chris speak with or interact with or engage with Dave Fizdale on the coaching side and the staff about style, about the mix? Because there was definitely last year a friction between the personnel and the roster that you guys had and the ability to try to play in a way that I think would have been more comfortable for David Fizdale. How does that interaction work throughout the process?
Well, yeah, I just think there's just a constant back and forth. I think it's been really organic with Fizz, which has been really nice. You know, that we just see each other practice and talk and, you know, or we'll talk after practice or on the road or whatever, but it doesn't have to be this thing where, like, I don't know how to put it. Like it's not something we have to schedule. It's just something organic
right.
that happens. And I think that's just because there's a real kind of inclusive collegial sort of environment.
Do you suggest like lineups or personnel moves or anything like that? Do you guys say, look, because I know you have plenty of numbers, plenty of bits of data that you like to share with players and staff and everything else. Some of it is public, some of it is proprietary. You go and you shove this and say, look, man, this lineup's doing XYZ. What do you think? Is that something that you do, or would he bristle at that, or how does that work?
I would say that's something that is really uncommon, just because he has enough coming at him already. And enough things, especially in the course of the season, the games are coming so fast.
Right.
I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but I think it's fairly uncommon. And, you know, he has access to all the, we send him the data and the analytical reports and stuff. I mean, he has all that information. It's not like I need to, you know, run down to him with a PowerPoint or something. You know?
And he likes, in spite of the take that for data thing that has swept the nation, mm-hmm. he likes data. He's a numbers guy. He's not averse to this sort of thing, is he?
I absolutely agree. He's very open to it, and I think you know, if you can show him a numerical case for something, he's on board. So
I always thought that was you know, he kind of wants to play that up a little bit. I was like, you're kind of a nerd, Fizz, a little bit. I mean, in your heart of hearts, you appreciate the numbers a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, you talk about me or Fizz?
No, Fizz. I know you,
yeah.
John.
I mean, yeah, I don't do anything with numbers.
You're all about the intangibles,
yeah.
Right, all those things. What do you think of this draft? In totality, first, like just kind of an overall. Top to bottom, compared to you know, some of the recent drafts.
Yeah, I would say it's not there isn't like an epic player at number one. I don't think, but it's just really strong at the top, like through the top, you know, 7 to 10. Let's say it's just strong, and then after that, it's just like every other draft. I mean, the 23rd pick in one draft is pretty much like the other, but at the top it's a strong group at the top.
Is what accounts for when you talk about like every other draft? There's always in every year there are always each team that drafts whoever in the late first, second round, whatever it may be, guys that aren't, you know, the obvious top choices. They always typically say, oh, this guy was, you know, 10th on our board or 15th. I don't know how he fell this far. And there's so many guys fall far relative to where they were on draft boards. How what is that variance, John? How can there be within what you guys value versus like what Team X, Team Y, whoever it may be, values? How can there be like a 30 spot difference on a board, or is all of that just like we need to say that because that's what we like to say?
No, I think it's fairly legitimate. I think you know, for any of you who've done fantasy drafts, I mean, a similar thing happens, right? Like, If you have the 12th overall pick in your fantasy draft, like, you're not getting the number 12 guy on your board, most likely, unless
right.
you just had a horrible run of luck. So, a similar sort of thing happens, and I'm sure there's some random number equation that you could probably build some probability model to explain what, if you're picking 47th, how likely you are to get the 30th player on your board.
Right.
I haven't bothered to do that, but...
Feels like that's an intern job. I feel like somebody could do that. I think it's an intern gig right there.
If you want to, send an intern over here to do that.
If somebody wants to impress, and try to make their way up the analytical board, maybe this is something that they could do. Just kind of say, you got to have a little proof of work. Got to show a little something here, because the reason I say that, John, is because there obviously are a finite number of actual data points in terms of what guys do, but there's an infinite number of ways to evaluate and to assess those things. Are there things in particular, without obviously giving away the keys to the kingdom here, but are there certain things that you like to see more so than perhaps others? Are there certain formulas or certain assessments that you like to make that you think are particularly important when you make this decision that might explain some of this variance we're talking about?
I do think teams are looking at different things sometimes. I also think this is an extremely inexact science, and that plays into it as well. And you can see from how often we're wrong in this, and not just wrong in a bad way, wrong like, wow, that guy that was picked 47th is actually the best center in the league. Huh?
Right. Yeah, interesting, right.
So, so there's just a lot of variance to it, trying to project, what 19 and 20-year-olds are going to be like when they're 26. I think that plays into it. I think for me, I look at a few things. I try to look at indicators of just how well the guy is able to read and feel the game, how likely the guy is to improve from what he is at the moment, because really almost all these guys need to get better to really be high-level NBA players, especially after you get after the first couple picks. And then there's the whole aspect of this that turns you into a private detective, right? When you're trying to find out all the background of the guy, work ethic, family, how is he wired, what motivates him, all those things.
This process, too, when it actually comes down to it, you guys make the pick. There's been a lot of discussion. Obviously, the Grizzlies have a checkered past at times with some draft picks, and you are not involved in the majority of those, so you can't speak to that process. But at this point now, with how things have gone, and your draft room, how does the actual pick? Who's ultimately making the call on the pick? I mean, Chris does it, I guess, but how does that you get to that point? What's the process?
Right. I mean, we come in with a battle plan. We have a board. We have players that we've identified that we would go after if they fall to a certain spot, and that's all done in the lead up to the draft. And Chris is orchestrating all those meetings and making the final call on where everyone goes on the board. But obviously, there's a ton of input that goes into us. Into that from me and Ed and from our scouting department. Those guys have really been on the front lines and doing a lot of work in terms of getting the background on these players and, going out to all their games and talking to coaches and whatnot. So it's up to us to filter that information and look at some other information of our own, some of the analytics we've done in-house, anything we can glean from what we've seen in either the games we scouted in season or from the combine and the workouts and whatnot. And then, we put all that information in front of Chris, and then at some point he's got to make a call and say, no, that guy's ahead of that guy.
How much public information, when stuff comes out about Team X liking player Y, Team X not liking player Y, they work out, they don't work out, what percentage of that is anything that's legit at all?
There's a lot of fake news out there.
Oh, come on now. Come on, John.
a lot of smoke screen action.
Witch hunt. Sorry, I had to just throw that out there.
A lot of decoys.
But you guys, but if everybody knows it's a decoy, then it's not a decoy. What is it like?
Yeah.
You guys, what are you guys like? Oh man, I can't believe it. That Lonzo's going to go work out for. Oh, now he's talking to the Sixers. What? Oh, that's. I mean, you guys all know this is all faking. What's the point?
Yes, you know, some of it is more transparent than others, and it depends on. It depends a little bit on who's playing the game and what they're trying to achieve. You know, sometimes it's coming from the agent side. They're trying to work their client into a specific spot. Sometimes it's coming from the team side where they're trying to put out some misinformation to maybe coax another team into a trade or whatever. So there's all different angles to it, and it really depends on the motivation from that angle.
Sounds like four.
And then every so often the media guys do get one right.
It
turns out to be legit.
But it's four-dimensional chess is what we're looking at here. Everyone's playing. This is quite a game. Real quick, too, would you guys – how much does free agency impact what you guys are thinking, at least from a draft perspective? And I say this in particular because not so much – you guys drafting, you guys may buy a second-round pick. Who knows? There are other things you could do. One of the things you could do, theoretically at least, you guys have some cap space to work with. There are teams that reportedly would like to open up some space to sign some higher profile guys. Would you be interested? Could you guys use your space, limited though it may be, but there is some of it to
you must have found some of this space lying around when in a place we weren't looking.
Well, you got a little bit, not a ton, but a little bit, right?
I mean, not if we want to bring anyone back.
But I'm saying that would impact free agency, obviously.
Yeah.
So I'm saying, is that something that you would consider? Then there would be a back end to that, of course, that we're talking about here, not bringing guys back.
Yeah.
But is that something that you would consider if you value the draft that highly, or if you had an entree, let's just say hypothetically?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think as you can probably tell, that one's pretty low on our radar, just because it would just nuke us too badly from trying to build a roster for next season.
So the priority is still from that end, the free agent situation.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as focused we are on the draft right now, that's one player out of 15 probably.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's unlikely we would trade in to get more than one guy. We still got to deal with the fact that we have four major players that are free agents and we either have to retain or replace in order to, put our best team on the floor next year.
What does summer league look like for you guys?
Hot. We're going to be in Vegas in the middle of July. We should have a pretty fun summer league team.
I mean, Roddy's playing, right? Deontay and
Roddy should be playing. We should have Didi. We should have Wade Baldwin, Wayne Selden, Jarrell Martin. So
it's a big group. This is an important summer.
Yeah. No, it's a big summer for these guys. Yeah, absolutely. It's really a chance for them to show. That they've made some strides and are ready to compete for positions in the lineup, and so I think it is big for all five of them.
Are you coaching?
No, I've
okay.
I've
that's a shame, John. You should just one give you like a quarter
really,
or something. Come
really,
on,
it's really not a shame. It would be. I see from the media perspective, it would be highly entertaining.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
To watch me flounder. On the sidelines, but I'll leave the coaching to people who can actually coach.
So I appreciate it, John. Thank you for taking the time. I know you guys, as I said, are very, very busy, and now things start to kind of finalize, and you guys bunker down and get your board together in whatever may or may not happen next week. I know you guys will be eminently prepared for it. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me. This was a welcome respite from running around with my hair on fire like I'll be doing for the next couple of weeks. thank you.
Hey, man. Appreciate it. Thank you, John.